called the Black Man is God.
Yeah, no God.
It's called the Black Man is God.
Next album. The level
this is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got
you
this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can move me? You really do? Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet. A prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreamed? He carry your beat to cassette. I met OB as an OG in the section. Nah, I was legend, recipe pop the legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seems like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached him, blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like him. Never make me think wrong. Just make me angry. Never, never make me go in the dark. And never talk about who's gonna stop me. Well, ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not
a
heavyweight
in the
world fast enough to stop me.
He's a poet, a prophet.
Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. Maybe I should be singing Tony, Tony, Tony. Do you know what today is? Okay, all right. I can't sing at all, but the point is that it was August the 13th of 2012 when Hip Hop Sports Report first penned its first article and it went up into the internets. And from that day, a website was born. And 12 years later, we're still standing. Jay Hicks, HipHopSportsReport.com, the preseason podcast of the year. The Hip Hop Sports Report podcast is back once again. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We are celebrating our 12th birthday anniversary, podiversary, website anniversary, birthday. We done had 12 of them. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I've gotten some praises and some kudos from some folks today on the anniversary of the website, and so we greatly appreciate that. As always, I'm very grateful to be able to kick it with y'all, for y'all to spend some time and listen to me ramble about whatever it is that happens to be on my mind that day. Oftentimes, you know, it's about Tom Brady or something of the sort, right? A lot of the same topics have been recycled. Not my fault entirely, but you know, hey, it's the 12th, right? It's our 12th birthday. So why wouldn't we shout out Tom Brady on the 12th birthday of Hip Hop Sports Report? But seriously, though, man, I appreciate y'all for checking us out and for rocking with us for this long. We've had so many different guests over the years, and this podcasting thing and this website thing has led to me actually launching my day job, my full-time job career. It started in part due to Hip Hop Sports Report, and the podcast has led to me doing some really cool things on my job currently, 12 years later. So I owe a debt of gratitude to myself and to all of you for listening and for sticking with us and for reading up on the stuff that we put out there. To my lovely wife, who encouraged me to start the website from the very beginning. And to all of our frequent contributors, you know, Mark Hicks, Vince Hicks, Kenneth Hicks, Anthony Houston, among many others. We just thank you guys for your support and for your unwavering unwavering support, man. I mean, I'm just blown away. The people that tend to retweet our stuff all the time, the people that read our content, that always share it on Facebook or whatever, man. I mean, it's not lost on me. So I do one of these every once in a while where I just, you know, I just start, you know, just profusely thanking people for all of the contributions that they've made to the website and for me doing this for as long as I've done it. I don't think most people understand what all goes into it. And even though I don't get to create as much as I once did, I mean, that's because life has changed over the years. And 12 years ago when I started this website, I was not married and I had no children. Now I'm married with four children. And so these things happen, right? So a lot's changed over time. And as a result, you know, the website has its place, but, you know, duty calls, right? Shout out to all the dads out there that know what time it is. You know what I mean? It's not easy for us dads out there to try to do the full-time thing and then do your passion stuff on the side. And especially if you are anything like me and you have to work from home from time to time, especially if you have a kid home during the summertime, it's a lot. Because I was on, like, you know, full, like, Barry Bonds 2001 dad mode today. I mean, from the first thing in the morning, I'm getting kids together and dropping them off and coming back and jumping right into my work and making lunch for my son and I and jumping back into work and doing laundry in between, cleaning the kitchen during in between and, you know, trying to get my son to straighten the house up before his mom gets home. Trying to be a good dad in the evening. You know, all this stuff. Taking the trash out. Doing more laundry at night, you know, spending some quality time with the wife, and then the podcast. So this is what it is, y'all. But I, again, I'm very grateful to have you guys, to have this platform, to have this voice. And I think what we do here is really good. Like, I'm just like, I go, am I biased? Okay, sure, I'm biased. You got me, right? But I'm just saying, though, like, if you objectively look at the content that I think we've put out in terms of the quality of the pieces, the accuracy of the predictions and the takes, the versatility that we've shown, myself and again the frequent contributors, most notably Anthony Houston and Kenneth Hicks, we've done a lot for this website. Mark Hicks, obviously, with the Mark Draft. I mean, we've done a lot of stuff here, and it's been good. Like, I think it's been, dare I say, excellent. I mean, I'm just gonna put that out there. So again, there's more to come in the future. We're not stopping anytime soon. So thank you for sticking by our side, like Jadakiss once said, by your side. I guess I'm just in a sing-songy kind of mood this evening. I'm just going to keep singing, I guess. Actually, I did want to touch on music right quick because, again, another thing that they don't tell you that when you have kids, that if you're any type of a good father, you can't listen to rap music with a bunch of cursing in it with your kids in the car, right? So, as a result, I am left to find very limited time to take in music, which I'm not really proud of, I'll be quite honest with that. But this is kind of the hand I've been dealt, and I don't want my kids running around quoting any of these rappers. Like, if you turn on the radio, I'm like, oh my god, these female rappers, yeah, I mean, they're as blue as anybody. But I mean, man, like, you know, I don't need my kids running around quoting Yo Gotti. Like, that's not necessary. We don't need any Freddie Gibbs quotes, nothing like that. One of my sons, he will stand there and sing a lot of songs. You know, my daughter loves Jay-Z, but, you know, I can find the clean version of most of Jay-Z stuff, but not even all of that. It's a headache, I'm not gonna front. So but I did find some time to listen to one album this summer, and that was Eminem's album. So he came back with the death of Slim Shady, Coup de Grace. I gotta tell you, man, I had an epiphany right before I jumped on this podcast and started recording. So I was like, let me just get this Eminem take out the way, and then we got some other stuff planned for this evening. But I thought it was fascinating that Eminem's been in the game longer than Hip Hop Sports Report. I mean, Eminem's been around making, like, legit studio albums since, like, 1998 or whatever it is. So he's, like, 25 solid years into this rap game as a legitimate mainstream artist. One who's at the top of the charts and always at the center of attention, I might add. So what took me back about this album was that this Eminem project had everything, everything that you would expect from an Eminem project. That's the best way I could describe it. I liked it for the most part. I've defended Eminem on our platform many times in writing, in podcasting. I think Eminem, I've also ripped Eminem before when I thought he put out some garbage. But I'm just saying, in general, I am a fan of Marshall Mathers and his music. I believe he's one of the few people who can legitimately stake a claim to reverse racism out here, okay? There's not a lot of white cats that can legitimately get away with claiming reverse racism. I feel like Eminem is one of them. Because racism only truly exists within the construct of power. There's a power dynamic at play where there's a group that is of controlling interests that has the ability to use race or nationality or things of that sort to take away from another group or individual, right? And that's kind of what we see with Eminem, I believe, on a regular basis. Because I believe he gets a raw deal from black hip-hop fans. I really do. I don't think M gets the credit that he deserves. I think he's one of the five best rappers probably of all time. Certainly in the top 10. But people act like he doesn't even belong there. And the reason is because we as black people oftentimes have a hard time with connecting with his music. I mean, he sounds like a crazy white boy to a lot of us. I mean, he's talking about doing crazy stuff to his mom and the mother of his children. And you know, the beats are kind of rock influenced and they're not 70s soul influenced. And these are all things that have been talked about long before me. Like, I'm not the first person to make any of these points about Eminem. But I do believe that talent-wise, bar for bar, he is practically in a class by himself. I mean, that doesn't mean that you're not going to catch some whack rhymes in there from time to time. But that's any rapper. Any rapper that's been around as long as he has is going to have some duds mixed in there. And that's all right. We can live with that. But I think it's the connectivity piece that is lacking for a lot of black fans when they listen to his music. And they just can't get on board with it. And even myself, I'll fully admit, I don't ride around in my car vibing to Eminem all the time. Like, I don't do that. But I do have a wide appreciation for his ability. Eminem's ability is, again, on a level that few in his craft have ever reached. And so I have a great appreciation for that. But getting back to this particular album, it had everything. It had dope lyricism right out the gate with the Renaissance right off the first record. I mean, he was spitting on that one. He was spitting on Fuel with JID. It was fire coming through this whole project, you know, in various pockets. Were there some duds in there? Yeah, there was some stuff in there I didn't love. Were there some questionable beat selections? Yeah. Again, typical Eminem. Were there, you know, was he talking about his daughter Haley and his other children? Yeah, you better believe Haley made an appearance or a reference or two. Was Eminem doing a lot of name dropping? Yeah. Was he talking about Dre? Yep. Was he making a bunch of random attacks on people like Christopher Reeves for some reason? Yeah. And he even made fun of himself for doing that, saying that he made a whole song about Christopher Reeves back in 2004, but it didn't make his album back then, and he put it on this album. I don't know how serious he was, but the point is he was doing a lot of talking about quadriplegics. It's just weird. Like, this stuff that probably doesn't need to be talked about by anybody, let alone Christopher Reeve, who, you know, God bless him, that was 20 something years ago when that incident went down, and M's in his 50s now. It's like, why are you still talking about that? But that's who he is. Was there Paul Rosenberg, I think is the guy's name. There's a Rosenberg skit in the in the album. I mean, everything that you would want, it's all there. And so, and all the classic crazy Eminem stuff, the murder, the odd skits, the goofiness, the goofy lead single, Houdini, it's classic Eminem. And so, you know, I found myself excited to hear the project, and I was like curious, like, okay, what's M going to do on this one? And when I heard it, it's just kind of like, wow, like, he really just delivered the same thing that he always does. But I don't know if this is an issue that's unique to hip-hop or not, but I just feel like hip-hop fans can be very selfish at times because we have a tendency to really push our artists to give us whatever we want from them at a given time. By which I mean, if we want Eminem to evolve, then we're going to get on him if he doesn't. And if we want an artist to say the same, then we're going to get on him if he doesn't too, or she doesn't. We've heard people get on Eminem for talking about the same kind of content and the same type of stuff and the South Park jokes and whatever. Like, it's the same stuff that we've been hearing from Eminem for over 20 years. But then we also heard Jay-Z years ago say people were mad at him for not evolving, and they're like, Jay's like, go listen to my old shit then. If you want to hear some old Jay-Z, go listen to old Jay-Z. But this ain't old Jay-Z. I've changed. Like, Ho said that. He put that on wax before. So we have this thing with our rappers where it's like, okay, do we want them to be evolved versions of themselves and talk about new stuff? Or do we want them to remain the same artists that they always were that made us fall in love with them in their poetry in the first place? And it's really unfair to the artists, like, if we're being honest about it. And I don't think that we are ever really honest enough about how selfish we can be as consumers. I don't know if this happens in any other genre of music. Like, and I don't know other genres of music well enough to say for certain, like, are Eric Clapton fans getting pissed at Eric Clapton because his latest album is the same as his album from the 70s or whatever? Like, same old Eric Clapton, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, or is it the other way around? Like, are they mad at him because he changed? It's like, why did you, it ain't broke, don't fix it. Damn that Bruce Springsteen. It's the same Springsteen. He's still rapping about factory, or rapping. He's still singing about factory workers, like, all these years later. Like, do people get mad at him for that? Like, what's he supposed to be singing about? Silicon Valley? Like, I don't understand how we're just always putting pressure on our artists to do whatever it is that we dictate that they do. So, in other words, when we hear Eminem make this album, and we hear the skits, and we hear the goofy stuff, and we hear the questionable beats, and we hear the excellent lyricism, and we hear the whack raps in between, intermingled in there, and we hear the name dropping and stuff, it's kind of like, this is what we should expect when we turn on an Eminem album. Like, we know who he is. And why would he change? This has been working for him for a quarter century. He's arguably the most successful rapper of all time. So why would he do something drastically different? He can maybe color outside the lines a little bit, but to what end? You know, to appease Justin Hicks on the couch in Chicago? Like, why would he do that? You know what I mean? So he has his fans. He's probably comfortable with his legions of fans. And then if there's people that are going to rock with him, then so be it. And that's, he knows what it is. He already knows what time it is. There's a certain segment of the hip hop community that he's never going to reach. And I'm sure he's quite all right with that. And so I don't know. That was kind of my main takeaway when listening to M's album. Good album. Not the best thing I've ever heard in my life, but there's definitely some solid raps on this. If y'all like lyricism, y'all should probably go ahead and check it out. I actually wanted to talk about so let me backtrack. The first article I ever wrote for HipHopSportsReport.com was published on August 13th, 2012, and it was about hip-hop's influence on the 2012 Summer Olympics in London. And there was a lot of influence there for those of you who may have forgotten, from Ludacris hanging out with Team USA basketball and the swim team. I think he was chilling with Ryan Lochte, and Ryan Lochte had the grill like Paul Wall. Paul Wall made him a red, white, and blue grill. Serena Williams, crip walking at Wimbledon. There was a lot of influence there that was seen. That's just to name a few things. And the Summer Olympics just concluded, as you probably well know, in Paris 12 years later this past Sunday. And who do we see bearing the torch at the start of the Paris Games? None other than Snoop Doggy Dogg, right? Big Snoop Dogg was rolling through the streets down the Champs-Élysées by the Arc de Triomphe. An Eiffel Tower. It was Snoop holding the torch. When I was a kid, Muhammad Ali held the torch in Atlanta. And that was a big deal because although he used to be very much hated by a lot of people, Muhammad Ali had grown into becoming one of the more beloved figures in the world by the time he was given the torch in 1996. And it was a big deal that he'd gotten to hold the Olympic torch. Especially after, once upon a time, he threw his Olympic medals in the Ohio River or whatever. And so we went from that to Snoop holding the torch. And that's not a knock on Snoop. I think Snoop has had one of the most unbelievable careers of any artist ever. And we've seen him come from the shy kid who couldn't even look in the camera on Yo! MTV Raps to now being an international icon and holding the Olympic torch in the streets of Paris, of all places. It's really cool. And then now the Olympics is going to his hometown of Los Angeles in 2028. And so now Snoop and Dre are out there doing their thing. So it's really cool to see, again, hip hop's influence on that stage. And I thought that was really dope. I want to talk about Team USA. I mean, there's a lot of things I could touch on from the Olympic Games. I didn't catch the Turkish dude with the pistol in real time. I missed him. Okay, I seen it later online. I was like, oh, this dude is a real live like assassin. Like, this guy's like Sterling Archer over here, just kind of just one hand, one eye closed, and just squeeze. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was his whole MO. Like, I missed that though in real time. Like, there was a lot of stuff. And I guess I would be remiss if I didn't mention the crazy Australian lady that was, air quote, breakdancing. I guess breakdance is not coming back. I guess that woman was such an abomination that they decided to scrap breakdancing from the Olympic Games altogether, which I was kind of okay with it not being a part. It was weird that it was a part of it in the first place. Here's the thing, y'all. Black people have this weird relationship. And I don't want to speak for all black people, but I'm just going to say this anyway. Black people have this weird relationship with certain cultural things that we've adopted or created, and how they are represented by other cultures or other people, right? People outside that culture. It's always very funny for us. James Naismith, a white dude in Massachusetts, created basketball. But you don't see black people feeling bad about that being awesome at that game. Or golf was created in Scotland, right? Tiger Woods comes along and dominates, and most black people, myself included, when Tiger first came out, was like, Tiger's awesome. So, you know, we don't feel funny about that sort of thing. But you put breakdancing in the Olympics, and then you have all these non-black people competing in it and winning gold medals in it, and I don't know who on earth was judging it. It feels a little weird for us because we've had so much of our culture stripped away from us in this country. And so we create something, and then you see it on that stage, and we're not represented, and it feels odd, at least, to say the very least. So I'm not totally upset that it's going away, but I was very proud to see that crazy lady from Australia she was having convulsions. I don't know what the hell she was doing, but a friend of mine said that when she hit that one little thriller-looking move, a friend of mine said that she looked like she was trying to sneak for a snack in the kitchen at 2 in the morning. I don't know what she was doing, y'all. It was not breakdancing. I was very proud to see that she was awarded 0 points for that monstrosity. Be that as it may, the Team USA men's basketball, those last two games were something to see. The game against Serbia, the wild comeback, the frenetic finish, leading with LeBron James kind of swooping through the lane and hitting layups, and Steph Curry making some big shots. Joel Embiid, hello. Embiid finally waking up in a big game and having a moment. Y'all remember when we talked with Vince Hicks a little while ago about these basketball players and these moments? Embiid kind of had a little mini moment in that Serbia game. Steph Curry absolutely had a moment in the gold medal game against the host country of France. What's funny about Steph is we do this thing where we just kind of pick and choose who we like and when we like them, and it's not always consistent, and that stuff bothers me. And we play the results, I think, a little more often than we should. You know, it's just, we move goalposts all the time. The best example that I can give of this right now, at the top of my head, is my man Chris Paul, who you guys know that I'm a huge Chris Paul fan. Chris Paul was getting criticized for years for never making it out of the second round. They had so many jokes online about him. Oh, he's never made it to the conference finals. He never made it to the conference finals. Well, then he makes it to the conference finals, and he had like a 40-point game to close out Utah to get there. And then it's like, okay, so is he awesome now? Well, then it's like, oh, he never made the finals. Well, then he makes the finals. And it's like, do they give him credit then? Like, no, they still trash him because he hasn't won a championship. And they just keep moving that goalpost back. It's one thing that a player has not accomplished something, but because they haven't accomplished it, does that mean that they can't or that they just haven't? And when do we cite certain things as proof of or evidence of being indicative of who a player really is. I say all that because I'm looking at Steph Curry, and I see him just draining these incredible shots against France down the stretch. And after the game, there was a lot of commentary like, yeah, man, Steph Curry is... There was a lot of commentary saying, these are Steph's finest hour. Like, these are his greatest... This is his greatest shot ever was that last fall away over the double team three. That's his greatest shot of his career. This is the greatest moment he's ever had. This, that, and the third. Like, you heard a lot of that. And I saw somebody online say, and they had the nerve to say, Steph Curry isn't clutch. And I'm like, well, in my personal estimation, given how excellent of a shooter he is, and I'm talking about grading on the curve of being the greatest shooter to ever touch a basketball, I don't think Steph Curry's all that clutch, or at least he has not been throughout the course of his career by and large until he is, right? So he's not clutch until he makes the shots. I didn't think that was a very fair thing to say when most people are looking at this flurry, the Curry flurry at the end of this France game and saying, like, this is the finest moment of his career. The guy's hit a lot of big shots. Don't get me wrong. He's played in a zillion games. So you play in that many games and you are the man on your team for that long, like, you're bound to make some big shots. Like, you're going to hit some game winners, and that's great. I read, as you guys may recall, if you go back on the website, I did a piece on the NBA Clutch Award, and I retroactively looked at like the previous 10 to 12 years before that award was introduced, and I concluded that pretty much the most clutch players, based on the data that I pulled from the last decade or so, were LeBron James and Chris Paul. Possibly not in that order. It may have been Chris Paul then LeBron James, because they would have won like two or three of those Clutch Player of the Year awards at, you know, like between the two of them, they would have had like two or three apiece over the course of the years. And they finished like in the top three in my voting system. Now, I'll say that acknowledging the fact that I just said I was a big Chris Paul fan, but I have the data to back it up. So if you think I'm being, you know, funny, if I'm being a little funny with y'all, just go read the article and then come holler at your boy. But the point is that I think I did have Steph winning the Clutch Player of the Year 1 year. But considering how many shots he takes, how many big games the Warriors have been in, how long he's been the face of that franchise or the co-face with Kevin Durant for a handful of years there, you would think, considering how great of a shooter he is, that he would have been in the top echelon of clutch players over the course of the last decade. Like, you would have thought that he would have appeared more towards the top than what he did. And based on the research that I did, he just wasn't. Based on the eye test, you see a lot of silly turnovers. You see a lot of bad shots, a lot of missed shots. And it just reminds me of Kobe Bryant, who had this amazing legacy and reputation of being this great clutch player, when in actuality, statistically, he kind of wasn't. He made a ton of clutch shots, but he took a ton times 100 clutch shots. Like, that's how many he took. He never met a shot in crunch time he didn't like. And so it didn't matter if there was two or three guys on him. The shot was going up with Kobe Bryant. And so who cares if he's shooting 30% or 20% in that situation? It didn't matter, because you saw him hit five game winners this year. But what you didn't see was the 20 shots that he missed. You know what I'm saying? And so when I look at Steph and I'm thinking back on what I've witnessed from his career, you know, I think it's fair to say that he had not always been a clutch player up until this point. And again, this is not the first time he's made some clutch baskets, so I'm acknowledging that. We all know that he's made his fair share of clutch shots before, in my estimation. That's why that game four in the finals in 2022 against the Celtics was so huge for him. And getting that finals MVP was such a big deal, because he hadn't been always Mr. Reliable in those spots. And it seemed like he kind of got over a hump. And these things happen. You look at a guy like Kyle Lowry. Kyle Lowry was abysmal in the playoffs for years and years and years. That's who he was. He was a guy that you could not count on when the lights came on. Until he finally kind of powered through that in the 2019 playoffs. And he was a huge component to the Raptors winning the world championship. They shout out Noah Lyles. They would not have won that championship had it not been for the Golden State injuries. And Kawhi Leonard was the best player on the team. But Kyle Lowry came up huge in that spot. And now all those sins have kind of been wiped away with him. Like, we kind of, granted he's old now, but we kind of view Kyle Lowry as somewhat of a big game veteran player. And it's like, actually, he was garbage for years in those spots until he wasn't. So I just think it's funny how we kind of characterize these guys and how we look at these guys. And we're allowed to take in new information, and guys are allowed to grow and develop in their roles, you know. So I think that's kind of what Steph did. He came up huge. I see the LeBron haters are out in full force. They're out in full force. Trashing LeBron for winning MVP and all this other stuff. I mean, it's like, just stop it, y'all. Just stop it. Just give it up. LeBron bested you. He did. You don't have to think he's better than Jordan. You don't have to think he's the best player of all time. But if you can't honestly sit here and say that LeBron James is great, then you're just a hater, and it's on you. You clearly have a problem. If you want to call out LeBron for his antics on and off the court, fair game. If you want to call out LeBron for team hopping to try to make for a better situation for himself, that's fair game too. But you can't watch the games and say, like, he's not great. Like, you're just a fool at that point. And for this dude to be 39 years old, he will be 40 years old before the ball drops, LeBron James. And he's guarding Jokic in crunch time against Serbia. This is a team that has Joel Embiid, Anthony Davis, Bam Adebayo, three big men who made their bones in the NBA as defensive players. Were any of them on the floor guarding Jokic in crunch time of that game? Nah. It was 39-year-old LeBron James. And he was doing a pretty good job, too. You fold in the scoring, the passing, the decision-making, the rebounding, the leadership. I don't see how anybody else could be MVP. Not for nothing. Steph was trash for every game in the Olympics until the last two. So at least LeBron was consistent. I mean, was anybody else as consistent as him from game to game? Maybe you could argue Devin Booker, but nobody's about to give Devin Booker the MVP. We all know that LeBron wore the daddy pants on this team, y'all. He was the OG on the squad, just like Kobe was in the 08 redeem team year. That team had Dwayne Wade, it had Carmelo Anthony, it had Chris Paul, it had Deron Williams, some great young players on that team. And Kobe was the guy that they looked to down the stretch. Hell, Kobe took that game over against Spain in the fourth quarter. Like, he did. And so, and I think everybody was fine kind of filling into their roles, you know, with that. And so I think we have to now give LeBron the credit that he deserves for being the OG on this team. What do you call them? I can't think of what LeBron named this team. Whatever. The point is, he was the leader. He was the one bringing guys together. He was the one that was consistent from start to finish. And he deserved to be the MVP of the team. Or of the end of the Olympics. Like, I don't see how there's any real debate in that. Like, are you going to give it to Steph Curry for those two games? Are you going to give it to Durant because he was awesome earlier in the tournament? Or are you going to give it to the guy who was consistent the whole time and was the unquestioned leader from start to finish? I don't know. Like, who played well, by the way. It's not like LeBron was garbage. Like, he had a triple-double, I think, in the gold medal game. Like, what are we doing? And along with that, we saw Jason Tatum. His ego took a hit. Tatum's ego took a hit. He was glued to the bench. Steve Kerr glued his ass to the bench, and it was pretty funny to me. I don't know. I just found humor in it for some reason. Like, just the idea that this guy just got the richest contract in NBA history, was just in the NBA Finals, and won it for the first time, and now he can't get off the bench for Team USA, despite the fact that he was the second leading scorer on the gold medal team in Tokyo 3 years ago. I can understand Jason Tatum being a little salty about this. I can understand his mom being salty about this. People was getting on his mom like his mom's not a mom. Like, of course she's going to have something to say about her boy not getting some run. And she's got a good case. Jason Tatum's all NBA. I'm a fan of his game, you know. But he's in a weird space now. He's kind of living in a weird space. Not totally dissimilar from the space that Steph Curry once lived in. Where it's like, yeah, he's the best player on a championship level team. But is he that guy? Like, we think he's that guy. But is he? Like, the way that Steph never won finals MVP and that kind of hung over him. And he admitted to that. You know what I mean? Tatum didn't win conference finals MVP. Didn't win finals MVP. By the way, he did not deserve either one of those. And I saw people trying to make that case. And then he wins the championship and does all this goofy stuff that he saw on TV and on the internet all these years, which is also hilarious, which he deserved to get clowned for. Like, let's be real about it. Him trying to imitate the Kobe photo in the shower and then imitating Steph Curry. Like, what are they going to say now? And then imitating the Garnett, the yelling at hilarious. Like, I think Jason Tatum should, like, host Saturday Night Live and do some skits for real, because that was damn funny. Look, man, who were you going to put on the bench for Tatum? He's a small forward. He's 6'8", 6'10", somewhere in that range. Are you going to bench Durant after what we saw Durant do in that first game? Are you really going to give his minutes to Tatum? Are you really going to give LeBron's minutes to Tatum? Do you think in the closing moments of those, in that Serbia game and that gold medal game against France, like who do you trust more in those situations? Do you trust LeBron or Tatum more? I think that's easily LeBron James. This is a guy that I would trust more in those spots. And Tatum's lucky he got the minutes that he got, because Kawhi Leonard used to be on this team. I don't know how many minutes Kawhi was going to get from Steve Kerr, but if Kawhi was on the squad, Jason Tatum would have got literally 0 minutes. Like, he should be happy he got any at all. Where I think Steve Kerr screwed up was not putting Tatum in some of those earlier games that were blowouts. Team USA is up like 35 points with 8 minutes left. It's like, you could put Tatum out there and give him some run, and that might have prevented some of the scuttlebutt or some of the, you know, rumors or the whatever people talking about, like, why is he not getting minutes? I don't know what's more embarrassing for a player of Jason Tatum's caliber. Is it to get a DNP coach's decision, or is it to be the human victory cigar and they throw you in the game with 8 minutes left and it's a 35-point affair? It's possible Steve Kerr is a former player at an NBA level. Like, maybe he has some insight into that, or maybe he talked with Tatum beforehand and said, hey, man, would you rather me throw you in the game when the contest is fully decided, as if, you know, you're like the last kid on the bench and they're letting you play in the fifth quarter? Like, is this what you would you prefer us to do that, or would you rather just not play at all and just leave your warm-ups on? Like, you tell us, like, because we don't have to wash your jersey. You know what I'm saying? You could just roll the jersey right back out here tomorrow night. Like, we don't need you to, we don't need to do that kind of laundry. Like, that'll keep our bill down. You know what I'm saying? Like, what would you prefer? You can go straight to the club. You ain't got to hit the showers or nothing. Straight to Olympic Village on the first thing smoking. You know, like, I don't know what conversation Steve Kerr had with him. And I don't know what is the least embarrassing route for a guy like Jason Tatum. I think his time will come. Maybe in L.A., he'll be the big dog in L.A. Who knows, maybe LeBron and Durant will still be hanging on like the old-ass men that they are. And Curry, too, I don't know. But Tatum's time will come. But he doesn't even need to go. Like, I mean, Jaylen Brown's the one that's dying to get out there. Like, maybe Tatum just takes his gold medal and goes home. It's like, all right, the hell with this. Like, I could see that happening, too, because he's been on two gold medal teams already, at least, maybe three. What does Jason Tatum need to go to the LA Olympics for, you know? And do what? Ride the bench as a 30-year-old? Like, that would be crazy. So, like, why even roll those dice? I don't know. But I just feel like Steve Kerr did the right thing giving those minutes to LeBron and Durant. And I don't know who else's minutes Tatum was really going to take at that point. You know, like, they needed some, those guards, Jrue Holiday and Derek White, those guys needed to be out there to chase little guys around. And he's not big enough to deal with Jokic. And that's why Embiid and Bam is on the squad. And Anthony Davis, who played really well. So, I don't know, man. It's just somebody got to sit the pine. You see Tyrese Halliburton sat the pine. He ain't had no issue with it. So, I don't know. I have empathy for Tatum. Like, if I was him, I would have wanted to get a little more minutes. And if I definitely understand where his mom is coming from, but I think Jason Tatum had a pretty good year anyways. I think he's running around. I think he might have got Ellie Mae pregnant too. Like, he seems to be doing well for himself. So, so long, Summer Olympics. It's a lot of fun. And we'll see you in 4 years in Los Angeles. Who knows? Maybe we'll get our correspondent Kenneth Hicks down in L.A. to check out some affairs in person and let us know what the view is inside the Staples Center and how Jason Tatum looks riding the bench in L.A. I'm sorry. Oh, we need on-the-ground coverage of Tatum riding the bench. I'm going to transition to some football real quick. It is football time, y'all. It is NFL time. Football's back. And I want to talk quarterbacks. This is something that was on my mind. And I'm like, you know what? I think it's time. I think it's time to talk a little quarterbacks. I think it's time to talk a little NFL. So as we transition to our last topic of this anniversary evening, I wanted to touch on overrated, underrated. Who doesn't like a good overrated, underrated? I have a list of quarterbacks. I have some that are labeled underrated. I have others who are labeled overrated. And I'll bet you can probably guess, if you listened to me at all before, you can probably guess where a few of these are going to go. But let me just break it down to you. It's going to be very simple. I'm going to alternate overrated, underrated. I'll throw out a quarterback's name. I'll tell you if they're overrated or underrated. And I'll give you my reasoning why. And by the end of it, you'll agree with me. You clear? Be good? All right, let's get into it. Overrated. Patrick Mahomes. I'm coming right out the gate. Patty Mahomes. Overrated. Okay. Patrick Mahomes has very clearly defined himself as the preeminent passer in the game today. He is the quarterback who everybody would trade for to get on their team. He has earned the right to be at the top spot of any quarterback ranking, including the NFL Top 100, which somehow had Mahomes as the fourth best player and the second best quarterback behind Lamar Jackson. I don't know how they came to that conclusion. I think Patrick Mahomes has earned the right to be sitting atop any list like that and to be the top guy. Here it comes, y'all.
However,
the talk with Mahomes is still out of hand, and I still can't handle it. Like, I just can't. I just cannot handle it. And I've talked about this on the website and on the podcast numerous times before, so I apologize in advance if you've heard this, but you're going to hear it again. The way that we talk about Patrick Mahomes, especially on an all-time scale, where now we've rocketed him past the likes of Brett Favre and Steve Young and Aaron Rodgers and even in some cases Peyton Manning and Joe Montana. He never had to contend with any of those guys. People have just fast-tracked Patrick Mahomes straight into a Tom Brady conversation. The level of disrespect that shows for all those guys I just named, plus Dan Marino, plus Otto Graham, plus Johnny Unitas, plus Terry Bradshaw. I mean, like, the list just goes and goes and goes of great players. You know, I mean, Warren Moon, Jim Kelly, you know, you name it. Drew Brees, John Elway. There are so many legendary signal callers that they have just fast-tracked this dude right past, as if we're not playing in the most pass-happy, friendly era in NFL history. Doesn't matter. They just put him in the express lane. And Mahomes is chauffeured into a conversation with Tom Brady. Why? Because not only is it disrespectful to those other great all-time players, it's disrespectful to Tom Brady. And you hear these people go on TV and they talk about with such ferocity in their voice and such passion that how could Lamar Jackson be ranked ahead of Patrick Mahomes? And they're just flabbergasted by it. Where it's the same level of disrespect. In fact, greater. It's a greater level of disrespect to put Mahomes in a conversation with Tom Brady at this point. If you want to say that Mahomes, from a career accolades and accomplishment standpoint, is on pace to catch Brady in some years down the road, I can't really argue with that. But that's the best you'll get out of me. Because not only do my eyes tell me he's not a better player, the accomplishments, he's obviously light years away from that as well. And he's done a lot of great things, Patrick Mahomes has. What I will not get behind is, as I've said before, this guy throws 5-yard passes, 3-yard passes, 0-yard passes behind the line of scrimmage, but Andy Reid schemes it up so these dudes can run with the football after the catch. They're wide open, they run into the end zone, and then Mahomes has all these touchdown passes. Not only do they not have, I mean, granted, Casey doesn't have a great running game, but they choose not to run the ball when they get in close. They would prefer Mahomes to throw a shuffle pass to Travis Kelce from 1 yard out than to just hand it to the running back, which is an easier, less risky play. And even an average or below average NFL running back can convert a 1 yard touchdown. They don't want to do that. They want to give Mahomes all the glory. But then you watch these TV shows or you look on Twitter and they do these side-by-side comparisons like Mahomes and Brady, touchdowns in their first 6 or 7 years. Advantage Mahomes, he's got 150 touchdowns. It's like, because he's throwing the dudes on the 1 yard line. Like, do y'all not watch the games? Watch the games. The last 2 to 3 years, Mahomes, ever since Tyreek Hill left, he hasn't thrown the ball downfield at all. And again, I'm not suggesting that he can't. We know he can. But he's not throwing the ball deep. He's throwing the ball literally 2 to 5 yards down the field, and guys are running for touchdowns. And then they do these side-by-side graphics as if it's a knock on Brady. And that's not even considering the fact that Brady played in an era when passing for touchdowns was way harder. Passing, period, was way harder 20 years ago, 25 years ago when Brady broke into the NFL. It was. I was there. I was an adult. Like, I saw it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I saw Brady's early years. I saw it. I'm not one of these kids on Twitter that was like 3 years old when Tom Brady got drafted. Like, no. Like, I was in high school when he got drafted. I was in high school when he won his first Super Bowl. I was in college when he won his second Super Bowl. Like, I was an adult for all of Tom Brady's career. Okay? It was harder back then to play quarterback. Okay? It was. And they use these stats and they put them together. It just doesn't make sense to me. And so, again, Mahomes, he's great, but he's overrated in an all-time context. I'm not saying he's not the best today. I don't think Mahomes is light years in terms of talent ahead of some of his contemporaries. Like, people seem to think, like, we've never seen anything like this guy. Like, he's very, very, very good. He's not light years ahead of all the guys of his era. And we saw Mahomes' offense look very pedestrian for the bulk of the playoffs. His defense carried him to a Super Bowl last year. That last Super Bowl drive in overtime where they led the game-winning touchdown drive, I promise you, go back and watch that drive. Patrick Mahomes, it's a 5-yard pass, it's a 3-yard pass, it's a behind the line of scrimmage pass, it's a 2-yard pass, it's a 3-yard pass, it's a scramble. Like, he had like maybe one or two scrambles in there that went for like 15, 20 yards. That's fine. That's great. But like, as far as passing goes, he had one pass, I think it was like 7 yards. That was his longest throw on that entire drive. It was nothing special. It wasn't. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm just being honest. It was not a special drive in terms of level of difficulty. Now, you can say to me, Justin, what about Tom Brady's drive against the Rams when he was in his first Super Bowl, Super Bowl 36? It looks similar. And Brady didn't go for a touchdown. He went, you know, only for a field goal because that's all they needed. And Brady didn't have the scrambling in there. Okay, fair point. But Tom Brady was also a rookie, basically a redshirt freshman in that spot, going up against a team that he had no business beating in that game with no offensive weaponry around him and a defensive-minded coach and scheme. You know what I mean? That was what Tom Brady did, which is why that was impressive, because he was a baby in that spot. And even he hit a long pass to Troy Brown over the middle, like, for like, it was more than 10 yards in the air. Like, I don't know why people acted like what Mahomes did in that Super Bowl was so amazing when he literally just took what the defense gave him, which is great in its own respect, but it just was not a great degree of difficulty, and people just acted like it was the greatest thing they'd ever seen. And it just isn't. It just isn't. So I will die on this Mahomes hill, y'all. I will. I'm ready to do it. I'm ready to die on this Patrick Mahomes hill. Not to say that he isn't good or great, but he's overrated. Miss me with all this all-time crap with him, okay? When his team couldn't even score a touchdown in like 12 straight drives, or couldn't score a point in the playoffs last year, and they gutted through those games with great coaching and amazing defense and some luck, of course. But that stuff only gets applied to Brady. The luck and the other team screwing up only gets applied to Brady. Like, it's just very strange how they talk about Mahomes. He's overrated. I'll give you an underrated. Y'all can probably guess where it's going. Underrated. Deshaun Watson. Yes. Watson. Yes. Yeah, I went there, y'all. I went back to the Deshaun Watson well. I'm sorry. I mean, talent-wise, again, Watson at his peak, not like, I don't think he's much less talented than Patrick Mahomes. Talent-wise. Like, they did different things. You know what I mean? Like, the way Mahomes throws on the run, pretty much second to none, but Watson's deep ball was as good or better than anybody's when he was on his A game. Now, it's been a while since he's been on his A game, I'll admit that, but I don't believe that Watson is any less talented than any of the most talented quarterbacks in the NFL. But we did a podcast in November of last year after the Baltimore game where Watson was perfect in the second half, led the comeback road victory over the Ravens, and then was diagnosed with a shoulder injury and missed the rest of the season. And I defended Watson then, and I'm going to do it again here. I'm surprised I haven't heard anybody say this about Deshaun. People just still are clinging to this idea that he has been terrible with the Browns, and that the Browns are on the hook for the worst trade in NFL history. And I don't see that at all. And again, I'm not saying that Deshaun has lived up to the expectations. The expectations set by the trade compensation and the contract that came with his arrival to Cleveland, given that plus his former play and what we've seen that he's capable of doing, he's fallen short of all that to this point. I will fully admit that. That doesn't mean that he's been bad. That doesn't mean that he has that he's terrible or that he's some kind of D-level quarterback. Like, people are making it out. They just don't like him for what he was accused of off the field. That's all that is. But if you're actually watching the tape and watching the games, even though he hasn't been perfect, he's been better than what people give him credit for. And I'll just leave you with this. So Deshaun Watson, last season, people think he had a bad year. He wasn't any good. People will get on television and say, I haven't seen any flashes, not one flash from the old Deshaun Watson. These people are lying, man. They just either don't like the guy, don't like the Browns, or aren't watching the games. It's just one of those three things. Deshaun finished the season completing 61.4% of his throws for 1,115 yards, 7 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. He also had 142 rushing yards and a touchdown rushing. The Browns were 5-1. When he was a starter. And even if you throw out the Indy game, the Browns were still 4-1 as a starter. With him as a starter. Since he's arrived in Cleveland, and you take out that Colts game even, he's 7-4 as a starter. That's on pace for like an 11-6 season over the course of 17 games. which is a playoff team and a division winner in most divisions. But then, but again, I gave you his stats from last year. Let's extrapolate those stats out over the course of 17 games. I'm surprised nobody else has done this, but I did the math, y'all. I did my math homework. So we're not going to mess with the percentage, the completion percentage, because that is what it is. But 1,115 yards, 7 TDs, 4 picks, 142 rushing yards, and a touchdown, and a 4-1 record. Extrapolate that over 17 games. You know what his numbers are? 3,774 yards, 24 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 482 rushing yards, and about 3.5 touchdowns, and 13 wins. 13.5 wins, which is actually, if you round it up, is 14-3. 14-3. Now, you may say, Justin, that's ridiculous. Like, there was no way that Deshaun was going to go 14-3 had he stayed healthy last year. All right. Maybe you could say that. But if you remember that the Browns had P.J. Walker and Joe Flacco off the couch, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, and Jeff Driscoll starting games last year. And they still went 11-6 last year with all those guys starting games. So they threw away the Cincinnati game at the end with Jeff Driscoll. They didn't even try that game because they were trying to rest up for the playoffs. And they lost that game. DTR won a game against Pittsburgh at home. DTR lost a game at home against Baltimore where he was thrown into the fire. P.J. Walker lost a game to Seattle. Flacco lost some games out in L.A. and Denver. The Browns lost a game. I think that might have been DTR that started that game. The point being, you don't think Deshaun would have won any of those games? Like, I think he could have. I think it stands to reason to me that if they went 11-6 with Watson only basically playing in, what, 5 of those games, more or less? I think that it stands to reason that Watson's presence will get them at least one extra win. At least. If not 2. And then you consider that they threw away a game at the end of the year. And yeah, you're staring at 14-3. And the funny thing about Deshaun is that anytime you get you hear these people on television talking about what will Deshaun's success be measured by, you listen to local radio in Cleveland, you listen to national radio, national TV guys, when you hear them talk about how Deshaun's tenure in Cleveland will be measured, they almost always immediately say winning. That's the first thing that comes out of their mouth. Well, he's got to win. Well, again, Deshaun's numbers as a quarterback, his record anyways, again, throwing out the Colts game, which he only played one series, I think, and then got hurt and left. The rest of his 2 years in Cleveland, he's 7-3. Last year, he was 4-1. His last 3 full games last year, he was 66 of 97, which is 68% completions, 721 yards, 7 touchdowns, and 1 interception. That was his last 3 full games that he started and finished last year. And I gave you those numbers again. 3,700 yards, 24 touchdowns, 10 picks. Let me do a side-by-side blind comparison. Over 16 games, 67% completions, 3,678 yards, 24 touchdowns, 7 picks, 821 rushing yards, 5 TDs, and a 13-4 record. That was Lamar Jackson's season last year. Here's another one. 16 games, 67% completions, 4,183 yards, 27 touchdowns, 14 picks, 389 rushing yards, 0 touchdowns, and 11-6 record. That was Patrick Mahomes' season last year. And again, Deshaun would have been 3,700 yards, 24 TDs, 10 picks, and 14 wins. He's in the ballpark. Like, if the Browns had actually won 14 games and Deshaun Watson had been there the whole season, he would have been in the MVP conversation. Literally. They might have given it to Myles Garrett. Maybe they don't want to give it to Deshaun, whatever. But I'm telling you, with 14 wins and 3 losses that have been probably good for the best record in football, and 24 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, and nearly 500 rushing yards, and 3,700 passing yards, he would have been in the MVP mix for sure. So, the fact that Deshaun is talked about the way that he is, I don't get it. I mean, I get it. We all get it. But I don't get it. but we get it. Overrated. Give me Joe Burrow. Yeah. Now, I like Joe Burrow. I've been a Joe Burrow fan for a while. I've supported him in the draft process, on the mock draft. I've talked him up. I think Joe Burrow is a great quarterback. If you look at his career numbers, they're not as good as Deshaun Watson's. Okay? I'm just saying. Look it up. They're not. I'm just telling you. Joe Burrow, I think he's kind of made his bones, you know, in the postseason. That's why people seem to think he's like the second best quarterback in football. He did go into Kansas City and beat Mahomes. You got to give him credit for doing that as well. I do feel that he is slightly overrated. I think, not by much, but I think he's had these great receivers to throw to for pretty much his entire time in Cincinnati. In his defense, he has not had a good offensive line. And he won a playoff game despite getting sacked 9 times. That in and of itself is remarkable. So again, I'm not telling you that I don't like Joe Burrow or anything like that. I just think the guy gets hurt a lot. We saw Jake Browning come in and play really well as his replacement last year. And I think that he might be just a little hair overrated. Just a little. You know, when people talk like he's clearly that guy, like, I think he's very, very good. I'll tell you this, despite the fact that we saw Joe Burrow in Arrowhead defeat Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs a few years ago, we also saw him in Arrowhead just 2 seasons ago, and his team lost, and he had the ball in the fourth quarter with a chance to lead a drive that would have knocked the Chiefs out of the playoffs. It's basically exactly what Tom Brady did in the 2018 AFC Championship game. Joe Burrow had that opportunity, and he didn't do it. His team ended up punting, and Mahomes did the scramble, got laid out, got the flag, and then they kicked the field goal to win the game. That was the AFC Championship game for Cincinnati. Then last year, they don't make the playoffs at all. They get killed by Deshaun Watson in Cleveland in the first game of the season. Burrow ends up finishing the year injured, and nobody really bats an eye at it. Everybody's penciling Cincinnati right back into the AFC Championship game this year, like, or the Super Bowl even. I don't agree with that. So I'll put him as an overrated for now. Underrated. I'll go Justin Herbert. And Justin Herbert is a popular guy to get to pick on these days because he has not lived up to the hype, according to many, which is fair. I understand that, but I do think he's got all the tools to be very good. And again, I talked earlier about how even in basketball, we do this thing where we play the results a little bit too much. And when I think of Justin Herbert, I'm looking at a guy who has, you know, his second year in the league, he threw for 5,000 yards and 38 touchdowns. Like, that alone would make him one of the 3 or 4 best passers in the game, you would think. But his team was only 9-8 that year. His team has finished under 500 twice. They were under 500 last year, and they got the coach fired. But guess what? Brandon Staley was terrible. And I've said that on the podcast before. He was not any good. So now they have Jim Harbaugh in Los Angeles. They have a legitimate head coach there. The pass catchers there leave a lot to be desired. So I don't know if it's all going to fall into place for Herbert this year. But his time is coming because he's got the talent, and we know Harbaugh can coach. And so I think it's only a matter of time before the Chargers are making legitimate noise in the AFC West, which is something else that Patrick Mahomes doesn't get dissed for ever, is the fact that the AFC West has been garbage ever since the day that he got there. But for Brady, people still bring up the AFC East for some reason. I don't get it. So I think Justin Herbert has the goods to make another leap in his career. He's only been in, I believe, one playoff game, and in that game his team blew a huge lead. But again, and he wasn't particularly special in that game either against Jacksonville. But again, his coach is Brandon Staley. So I'm willing to, if we're going to give Trevor Lawrence a pass for Urban Meyer being his coach, why don't we give Justin Herbert a pass for Brandon Staley being his coach? Speaking of overrated, Trevor Lawrence. I've been on this for years, frankly. I've been talking about Trevor Lawrence being overrated for a good minute, and I talked about it all last season. This is a guy who had Urban Meyer for 1 year. Now he's got a Super Bowl winning coach with Doug Peterson, and he still hasn't done a whole lot. And he had one half of one good season, as far as I'm concerned. His whole first season was garbage under Urban Meyer. The first half of his second season, he was all right. The second half of his second season, he was very good. And then last year, he was nothing special. Even when the Jags were winning last year, and they finished last season in the tank, the Jags did. But even when the Jaguars were winning last year, I think they were 8-3 at one point. Trevor Lawrence's numbers were terrible. Like, he was like bottom half of the league in like all the major passing categories. I'm talking like yards and touchdowns. Like, he was way down there, and he fumbles the ball a lot. There's even video of him running through a drill in training camp where the coaches have the giant stick and they're trying to poke the ball out. He even fumbled in that shit. The guy is a turnover machine ever since he's been in the NFL. So no, he's overrated. And just because he went number one doesn't mean that we have to just anoint him. We don't have to do that. Cause you know why? Here's another one that's underrated. Jared Goff. Jared Goff was the number one pick in the draft, but he was never anointed. It's just funny how we just pick and choose the arguments that we try to attach to these guys. Jared Goff comes in, he goes to the Super Bowl with the Rams, but they give all the credit to Sean McVay. And Sean McVay basically says, you know what, Jared, you're good, but you're not good enough. I'm going to get me a new quarterback. And so Jared Goff leaves. And he goes to Detroit, and he was kind of, I don't call him a throw-in, but he was kind of a throw-in on that deal. Like, they got a bunch of picks back to Detroit for Matthew Stafford, and they got Jared Goff as to be their starting quarterback. And look what's happened in Detroit. All of a sudden, the Lions are in the NFC Championship game. So now you have Jared Goff has taken two teams to the conference championship. How many guys in the league right now can even say that? Like, I don't know. I mean, it might not be, he might be the only one. He might be the only guy in the league right now that's taken a team to multiple conference, taking different teams to a conference championship game. But he's never gotten the love. I like Jared Goff coming out on the mock draft. It was that year, it was between him and Carson Wentz, and I was in the Goff camp. I was right about that. Jared Goff still kicking. Carson Wentz is a backup somewhere. So, you know, I just feel like we play how we want to play it. And then here's an overrated for you coming at you. Matthew Stafford. Okay, here's another guy who is talked about in this upper tier or echelon of quarterback. And I don't think Matthew Stafford is quite that. I think he's good. This dude, though, threw up a ton of empty stats for a long time. And granted, he didn't have a lot to work with in Detroit. I will grant you that. But he always had Megatron. Okay, he had Megatron for a lot of years. And even with Calvin Johnson, he still wasn't really doing much. I mean, he completed 53% of his passes as a rookie. Okay, 59% his second year. His fourth year, under 60%. His fifth year, under 59%. His sixth year, barely 60% completions. Like, this is who Stafford was for nearly the first half of his career. But he always put up huge numbers. Why? Because his team was always trailing. They weren't winning any games. So he goes to the Rams, and he wins the Super Bowl with Sean McVay in the first year. And even that year, which is probably the best year of his career, he still led the NFL in interceptions. He had 17 picks that year that he won the title with the Rams 3 years ago. Matthew Stafford's tough as nails. We know he's tough on the field because we've seen him battle through injury and play some great games. We know he's tough off the field because he's got to deal with his wife. But what I'm saying is if you look at his team's record, I mean, going back to his rookie year, okay, 2-8. He only started 10 games that year. We'll go 2-8, 1-2, 10-6, okay, 4-12, 7-9. All right, 11-5. Oh, okay, 7-9, 9-7, 9-7, 6-10, 3-4-1, got hurt that year in 2019, 5-11, and then he's out of Detroit, you know, and then the Rams rescued him. So we give McVay all this credit for resurrecting Jared Goff, we give McVay all this credit for getting Jared Goff to the Super Bowl, but we don't give McVay all the credit for resurrecting Matthew Stafford. When he gets Stafford and Stafford does it, now all of a sudden Stafford's this great quarterback, even though he led the league in picks. And then after that, in with the Rams, he was 12-5, then 3-6, and 9-6. And Matthew Stafford's only won 4 playoff games in his career, and that was all in the same year, the year that they won the Super Bowl. But Matthew Stafford also lost every other playoff game besides that. He lost 3 playoff games in Detroit, and then he lost one other one with the Rams. Guess what? That was this past season, and guess who was the quarterback on the other sideline? Jared Goff! Jerk off! So, you know, make of that what you will. Here's overrated, Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, at this point, Aaron Rodgers, people thinking that the Jets are really about to win the Super Bowl or be a legitimate Super Bowl contender. Come on, man. The guy's 40, he'll be 41 this December. His head's clearly not in the game. We know he's talented, but he couldn't win a Super Bowl all those years in Green Bay when he had those teams that should have won, all those home playoff losses that he had like Peyton Manning. I mean, come on, man. If you think that Aaron Rodgers is going to take the Jets to the Super Bowl, I have some oceanfront property I'd like to sell you. That ain't happening. And he'll be lucky if he makes it through the season healthy just like he didn't last year. The season was 4 snaps long last year, 5 if you count the Achilles. Ooh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. But I don't see it happening this year. The offensive line still isn't fixed in New York. Him and Saleh don't seem to get along. There's all this controversy with Rodgers. It's not going to end well, okay? It's not. Here's an underrated, though, for you. Aaron Rodgers, okay? Because, again, people seem to forget about him when they talk about Patty Mahomes as the prettiest thrower of the football or, you know, the most spectacular quarterback or the best. You know, they try to act like they switch the words around. They play a little switcheroo and they take greatest out of the equation so they can knock Brady and then just say the best. Mahomes is the best quarterback. No, he's not. First of all, he's not better than Brady. Nobody is. Second of all, I don't know why Patrick Mahomes is better than Aaron Rodgers. I've seen Aaron Rodgers at his peak. He was at least as good, if not better, than Patrick Mahomes. And he throws a prettier ball than Mahomes. So, you know, I don't know. What do you want me to make of that? You know? I mean, I don't know where Rodgers ranks on the all-time list, but he's probably not high enough if we're putting Mahomes ahead of him already. You know, and maybe Mahomes does deserve to be ahead of him just because of the rings and the playoff accomplishments. I'll grant you that. But, again, I'm talking about the eye test. You know, the eye test says to me that Mahomes is getting a lot of help from Andy Reid. And you know, Rodgers is an all-time great. Like, I'm just saying, like, he's got, like, what is it, 4 MVPs or something like that? He robbed Brady once, but, you know, he should have 3 MVPs, I think. I think Aaron Rodgers is a great, great, great quarterback. I just think he's past his prime. Overrated. This one's easy. Kyler Murray. We know Kyler Murray's overrated, damn it. People still believe in him sometimes. Like, I don't know why the Cardinals still are clinging to this hope that this 5'12" guy is going to lead them to the promised land. Like, I don't see it happening. He got hurt last year. Once guys start getting hurt, they typically don't then not get hurt in the future. Kyler was the number one pick. I will never forgive the Cardinals for casting aside my boy Josh Rosen the way that they did for Kyler Murray, as if Kyler was this massive upgrade. And what has Kyler Murray done since then? I think he made the playoffs once, got smoked by the Rams or the 49ers? One of those teams killed the Cardinals. I think it was the Rams. You know, I don't see what it is that's so special about Kyler Murray outside of the fact that he runs around fast like a little jitterbug out there. Like, I don't see. They had to put a provision in his contract that he wasn't reading the playbook enough and playing too many video games. That should tell you everything you need to know about the dude. He's not it. I'm not saying he's terrible. He's not the worst quarterback in the league, but we need to stop talking about him like he's some kind of unbelievable talent, because he isn't, and he has not shown that he is on any level as of yet. Underrated, Brock Purdy. All right, I know we don't love Brock Purdy, but if you look at Brock Purdy's numbers over the course of the last, what is it now, 2.5, 3 seasons? Here, let me just do you a favor and read them for you. So the Purd Man has actually started a season and a half. And in that time frame, he has amassed a 17-4 record. He was 5-0 in his first season as a starter, which was the 2022 campaign. And last season, he played a full 16-game slate, even though technically 17 is full, but you get the point. He played 16 games last year, finished 12-4 in those games. In this season and a half, he has completed just a shade under 69% of his passes. Last year, he threw for 4,280 yards and 31 touchdowns to 11 picks. I mean, again, we have a guy who was a little undersized and was drafted last in the draft. So we just assume that he's not as good as his output would suggest. But maybe, just maybe, maybe he is good. How much success would Brock Purdy have if he were outside San Francisco? I don't know. But everybody wants to give Kyle Shanahan all the credit in this instance. Kyle Shanahan hasn't done so much. He's not Andy Reid. Hello? He's not Andy Reid out here taking multiple quarterbacks to the playoffs year after year and resurrecting careers of this quarterback and that quarterback. It's not quite to that extent just yet. So I think we owe Brock Purdy a little bit of credit here. Because if there was any question about what Purdy was in the playoffs, well, again, maybe he's not perfect, but he's amassed a 4-2 record over these two seasons. And one of those games, he lost in overtime. And the other one of those games, he got injured in the first quarter against Philadelphia, and the 49ers had no shot. And I believe they would have won that game. So those are the two losses that he has on his resume. He's 4-2. He's got 6 touchdowns and 1 interception in the playoffs. 3 game-winning drives and a fourth quarter comeback in the playoffs. Yeah, does he have a lot of talent around him? Yeah, he does. I mean, how much does he have to apologize for that? Again, I'm not telling you Brock Purdy's the best quarterback in the league, but is he a little underrated? Sure. Sure. We'll go with one last underrated, in addition to Purdy, is Jordan Love. And I think Jordan Love is about to take the leap, and which is really annoying if you're a fan of a team that has struggled for so long to find a quarterback, like my team has. But the Packers, they just rolled from Favre into Rodgers and then Rodgers into Love, and it looks like it's going to be like literally 30 to 35 years of quarterback excellence, basically back-to-back. That's kind of what we're headed towards. So be warned. I do think everybody's kind of predicting that the Packers are like going to be in a Super Bowl, and maybe they will be, I don't know. But Jordan Love is dealing with a very young team around him, and he was very good last year. And so I do think he's the real deal, and I think we're going to see a great season from him ahead. I don't think they gave him that money on accident. I do have a list of people who are properly rated. Properly rated. Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, Dak Prescott, Tua Tagovailoa, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield. I think those guys are all right where they belong. I think people think Lamar is great. People think Josh Allen's great. But they are missing the postseason success. But they themselves are very good players. We know what Lamar's limitations are. He's passing in the playoffs has not been where it needs to be. But that doesn't mean he's not dope. And I think everybody kind of, except for the players evidently in the NFL, people knock him appropriately for that. And same with Josh Allen. I think that he is, he hasn't had the playoff success that we would have liked. He can be a little reckless with the ball sometimes, but as a talent, he's as talented as anybody. He's got the size, he's got the mobility, he's got the arm, he's got pretty much anything you would want. If he can just keep the turnovers under control, he would be probably winning rings. Dak and Jalen Hurts, I mean, these guys are very good quarterbacks, or maybe not very good, but Jalen's good. Dak is pretty good. They put up numbers, but I don't think anybody has them in their top, like, 3 quarterbacks or, 5 quarterbacks. Even if they may get up there from time to time in terms of their play, they may have a season or so where they can crack the top 5. I don't think anybody would actually put them quite on that level just yet. Maybe they're close. So I think that they're probably in the right spot. Tua, same kind of thing. Like, we know the injuries and the limitations with him. We know that he's not going to be somebody that you're going to want to be whipping the ball around in cold weather. But he's good. And you can win a lot of games with Tua as your quarterback. And I think people know that. And Baker Mayfield. I think smart people know that Baker Mayfield is limited. I think he is proven that he can annihilate some bad teams and bad defenses. But if he's going up against typically an average team, or an average defense, or anything above that, he's probably going to struggle, and he's not going to get you much further than the playoffs. And granted, I give him credit. He's won two playoff games in two different cities, but he is, he's got his limitations, and you better make sure you have a great team around him, because he's not going to carry you anywhere. And then two guys that I thought were too close to call, CJ Stroud and Caleb Williams. I think that they're both supremely talented. I love CJ coming out the draft last year for Ohio State, and I thought that Caleb Williams coming out the draft this year, I have some question marks, but it's really not too much with the talent. It's more so the size and the personality stuff. But I think from a talent perspective, I think he's going to be very good. And hopefully for the Bears' sake, they got the quarterback of the future. And I think that CJ Stroud, I think that with some of the offseason acquisitions the Texans have made, I think we may be getting a little ahead of ourselves with the predictions. People have the Texans in the conference title game and the Super Bowl and things like that. It's because they had like a huge free agency haul. And typically those don't go well. Like, remember the Dream Team Eagles with Vince Young? Remember all those years the Washington Redskins broke the bank on free agents? Like, typically that doesn't end well in the NFL. So I'm not convinced that the Texans are just going to roll into this season and just be awesome again, just like they were last year. But CJ has a lot of ability, and I think I can understand why people think he might be in an MVP conversation coming into this year. I don't think he's going to get there. And I think the Texans in general are a little overrated, but I think CJ is very good. So I think CJ and Caleb are too close to call. But that's my list, y'all. Let me know where I got it wrong. The answer is nowhere, but I'm curious to hear what you think anyway. And so I appreciate y'all hanging out with me this evening. It's been a long podcast, but I just had to get some thoughts out there. So we've been kicking it for like 90 minutes to my surprise. And so I appreciate y'all. And I appreciate y'all over the last 12 years sticking with us, man. I'm humbled. I truly am. I'm humbled to come to you every time I am, and to get the downloads that I get, and to get the reads and the page views that I get. And sometimes I have articles that do better numbers than even I anticipated. And I just thank y'all for rolling with us and keeping on this journey, man. And we're going to keep on keeping on, man. Especially with the football season coming up. You know, we'll be back again soon. Jay Hicks, Hip Hop Sports Support, 12-year anniversary, signing off. We out of here. Peace. And thank you.